Welcome back for another OG Show Live. Mr. Randall, how you doing?
What's up, everybody? Welcome back to the Reel Down.
Welcome back to another episode of Bass Fishing for News.
Hi, boys and girls. Welcome to, once again, Bass Kayak Advance. Brother,
this is the final cast.
Another segment of Chasing the Tide, your saltwater connection on the Paladin.
Welcome back, everyone. Another episode of Feather and Fur, your host, Brad.
Welcome back to the Mindset Podcast. I'm your host, Crystal.
Hey, welcome back to Off the Water.
This is Q here with Adventures of Outdoor Woman Podcast.
Hey guys, welcome to the Rusty Hook Kayak Fishing Podcast.
We're brought to you by Pelican Built Tough. For all situations, go to pelican.com. Eastport Marina on the beautiful shores of Dale Hollow Lake. For all your lodging, kayaking, go to eastport.info. Yak Gadget. For all your fine kayak fishing accessory needs, go to yakgadget.com.
Hey everybody, welcome back to another episode of Bass Fishing for Noobs here on the Paddle and Fin Podcast. Flying solo tonight, I'm your host Sean. Susie is at a family gathering tonight and couldn't join us for tonight's show, but she should be back next week. So tonight you're gonna have to listen to me, but I thank you guys again for tuning in and joining in. We have a cool guest, another guy that's somewhat local to me, but he's also a YouTuber and has a lot of online content that's really great. So we'll definitely want to, you know, talk to him about that. And I'm curious to kind of pick his brain a little bit about, you know, some of the local waters that he fishes that I fish. And he seems to do a lot better than I do on some of those waters. So I'm curious to kind of see what his tactics are and, you know, see what we can learn from him. But before we get into all that, I'd like to just bring him in and introduce him to you all. So welcome to the show. This is the folks from Bassin' Up Moffitt. How's it going, man?
What's going on?
Not bad. How's everything going this evening?
Yeah, can't complain. Pretty good.
Glad to hear it. So I guess we'll start with just the easy stuff. You know, why don't you let the folks know who you are, where you're from, and kind of we'll find a little bit about kind of your fishing history.
So my name's Hunter Moffitt. I have Bassin' Up Moffitt YouTube channel. Do a lot of fishing around here, around Hanover, Pennsylvania area, I guess you could say, in southeastern Pennsylvania. I got started fishing when I was real young. Grew up trout fishing, so it's kind of funny I'm into bass fishing as much as I am now. But pretty much fish as much as I can get out, at least 2-3 times a week.
So, and I notice you fish a lot with your dad, it seems, right? And was he kind of the one who got you into fishing, or was kind of just always been, you know, fishing in your family kind of?
Yeah, he's the one who got me into it. And then I guess you could say once I hit about middle school, my one buddy was like, hey, let's go bass fishing, because we always went trout fishing. And he was watching like Bassmasters and stuff. So first couple bass I caught, I was hooked after that, and it's been history ever since.
Awesome. You know, bass are definitely a different kind of beast than trout are. Trout are cool too. Don't get me wrong, but I definitely, once I switch, kind of focus primarily on bass fishing, I never looked back. I still do trout fish and enjoy it, but my heart is definitely in bass fishing. So for sure.
Same here. It's just the different types of lures and everything that you can do and how different they react different times of the years to different stuff. It's fascinating as heck. And I feel like trout fishing is generally mostly the same kind of stuff that you're doing successful on most of the time. And I mean, yes, they're smart sometimes, but they're also kind of dumb.
And they're super fragile too. You know, you can,
yes,
you, not that you want to mistreat bass, but you can, you know, be a little, you know, they're definitely more hardy than a trout. Like, I feel like a trout you have in your hands for any length of time and they're struggling to swim away. But whereas a trout, you can, you know, fight them for 5 minutes, you know, and you go to lay them on your, you know, measuring board and they're flopping like crazy, fighting like crazy, just anything they can do to get back in the water. So, you know, definitely a little bit more of a fighting fish, I think, than a trout is. So. But cool. So, and have you always been like fishing from a boat, or started out on the shore, or how'd that progression go for you?
So I started mostly fishing from the shore all through middle school. And I guess you could say beginning of high school until I could drive. I was almost always from the shore. And especially during the summer when I didn't have anything better to do, I took time and walked the shores of the lake. Like, that is all I would do. Me and my buddy would go out there probably like 6 a.m. and stay out there till like 5, 6 at night at least. Sometimes even out till dark.
Gotcha. Yeah, and that's one nice thing about the summertime is it does stay dark a heck of a lot later. This is driving me nuts, this stuff getting dark at 5 o'clock. But
yeah, don't leave much time to do stuff after work.
It really doesn't. It really doesn't. So, but yeah. So, and I was kind of curious what got you started with YouTube and like where what led you to start your YouTube channel.
So I guess I had so many people around this area asking me what I do out on Marburg and a lot of the local lakes, like you said, that everybody struggles at, and how I get all the big fish that I do. And then I got into watching a lot of these other guys on YouTube. I was like, you know what? I could do that. I can catch the fish to create that kind of content. Why don't I try it? I can do it just as good as most of these guys. So I figured, why not try it and see what happens?
And I can say, just, you know, I've been following your channel for a while, and I can really see some of the changes that you've made just in the way you put your videos together and stuff. It really has, you know, you're definitely stepping your game up there too. So props to you for doing that, because your content just keeps getting better and better. So I think you're doing a good job there too.
I appreciate that.
And I enjoy watching you and your dad go back and forth too. So like when you both sit down at the desk and go through the lures and stuff, it's kind of cool to see you guys kind of feed off each other. And it's really good stuff. So
thank you.
Yeah. So one of the main reasons why I started following your channel mostly is because, you know, you fish a lot of the waters that I do. Just watching you, like every tournament that I've been on Marburg, I've done horrible. And almost to the point, like, I know for the kayak anglers of Central PA, we're always like, oh, should we go back to Marburg this year? And everybody's like, Marburg, you know, it's definitely a place where a lot of us struggle. So, you know, and to see the success that you have there somewhat regularly. And I just, like I said, I watched a video you did on Muddy Run. I started to have a little more success there this year than I had in the past years, but it's still not an easy lake for me to fish. That's a very interesting fishery just because of how deep it gets in the middle compared to the, you know, it can go from, you know, just a few feet deep to like 60 feet, you know, not going far off the bank. So it's definitely a different place to fish for sure. So I was kind of curious where you got your start on fishing some of these tough fisheries and like how you figured it out, like what strategies you did and how you figured out it was just trial and error, or, you know, you kind of just worked through, start one area, start shallow, work deep, or what was your strategies?
So it's especially on like Marburg, it's almost different all the time. I guess where I started, if you want to go to what I actually started doing on it, I guess you could say it broke it down over a couple of years. I started fishing shallow a lot and did okay here and there. And that was when the lake had a lot more grass. Recently, it hasn't had as much grass as what it used to. And then progressively started fishing deeper and deeper. At first, I didn't have no confidence in fishing deep with anything other than a jig or something that had almost constant bottom contact.
Okay.
And more so lately, especially with there not being any grass out there, I've been fishing deeper and deeper. Like, generally, I'm fishing around 25, 30 foot most of the time.
Okay.
All throughout the summer and even now, which now the bites kind of died off a little bit for me, but fishing's got a lot tougher since it's got colder too.
Right. Which is, I think that's pretty much true in general across the board. Even the river, fishing on the river for me right now has really slowed down. It seemed like the fall bite kind of dried up quick. Like it was on and then it was off for me anyway, but
Yeah, it seemed like it almost started early this year too.
I kind of experienced that same thing. Last year I felt like I was crushing it way further into the fall than this year. I know on the river my crankbait bite or my lipless crank last year I crushed it on it kind of well in like into November. I felt like I was still doing pretty good with that, and then this year it wasn't even early October and I kind of felt like I started losing the lipless bite and had to go to more kind of subtle tactics.
Yeah, definitely. It was the beginning of September, I think, or towards the middle of September on Marburg. I was really doing good with the Alabama rig, and it was 72 degree water. That's not typically the time period I'll throw that, but the bait was really schooled up like it typically does more towards, I guess you could say, that fall transition time.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess it was just because it got a little bit colder than it did maybe before, but that fall bite turned on for that Bama rig, I guess you could say then. And it was freaking nuts there for like a couple times out. And then after that, it like completely died off.
Now, and the Alabama rig was going to be one of the things I wanted to ask you about, because I did notice in a lot of your kind of later videos, the last couple, that was kind of a staple of your arsenal, it seemed. And I know I'm going to have a guest on here maybe in 2 weeks that it's going to be an entire episode just on the A-rig. But I wanted to at least kind of get a primer from you, if you don't mind, about kind of how you throw it and how much do you use like electronics to locate bait and stuff? Or is it more just, you know, knowing the area and kind of working it that way?
It's a little of both. So like, I'm sure you've noticed from the videos, a lot of times out of Marburg, I'll fish like the bridges and a lot of the riprap around the bridges. So that's semi a spot that I always know that there's holding fish, but I also am really looking at my fish finder and trying to find where like the key parts of the schools are, if there's a school around it. And I notice I do a lot better if the bait's really schooled up around the bridges. There's usually at least one or two, I guess you could say, around the pylons and stuff most of the time, but there's usually bigger numbers there when the bait's really, really there.
And that's just so kind of hit or miss whether you happen to be there when the bait is there.
Yeah, exactly. At least when I do really good, it's when the bait's always there.
Gotcha. And I know that's one of the tough things I imagine about putting your videos up from Marburg, because there isn't a lot of bridges on Marburg. So pretty much if somebody watches that video, they're going to know where you're catching them.
Yep, absolutely. And if you've been on the lake like even a handful of times, it's very easy to tell. So
yeah,
that can get a little frustrating sometimes, but.
But I'll say, you know, knowing that that's where I've seen you catch fish, I've gone to those bridge pilings and not caught fish. So you got to know what you're doing somewhat too, I believe. But I was curious with the A-rig, like, is that more of a cast out, let it sink, retrieve it back? Or are you putting pops in there? What's your go-to technique with the A-rig?
So I'll do a couple different things. It all depends on how deep I'm fishing with it. If I'm fishing deeper water, I guess you could say I'm calling deeper water, like anything 15 foot and deeper, mm-hmm. I'll typically weight it differently.
Okay.
And my two bottom heads, I'll put on like either eighth or quarter ounces. And then all my top ones are either sixth or eighths then, depending on which I'd put at the bottom.
Okay. And do you have a rig that you like, or that's your go-to A rig?
I would say I use the Umbrella rig the most, not really for performance, but just the fact that it's one of the cheaper ones. And I always go to the Flash Mob because it's got the blades. I feel like the blades make a huge difference.
I was going to ask about that, because I've thrown the Umbrella rig with blades more. Most of the ones that I have do have blades, and I was curious if I was missing something, if maybe I should try one without blades, or you know, whether that's a better draw or not. I was curious what your thoughts on that were.
Yeah, I really think the blades help a lot. It's a bigger draw, gives them something else to key into just other than the swim baits. They say the ones without the blades are good if like the fish are finicky or aren't really hitting that. But to be honest, I have not caught a single fish off of one without the blades yet, like ever.
Interesting.
And I've tried it probably just as much.
Okay.
Now lately, I guess in the last year, I haven't. Maybe since more people are throwing it a lot more now, maybe that'd be something to get into trying, but just haven't yet.
And do you have a go-to swim bait that you throw on those, or do you mix it up at all?
A little bit of everything. I use a lot of like the 3.3 to 3.8 inch size, like Kytex, or I'll throw like the Guggen Saucy Swimmer on there sometimes too. And the Zoom Swim and Super Flukes are another favorite.
Okay. That's the Super Flukes with the tails on them, I guess. Or the paddle tail.
Yeah, right? the Swim and Super Fluke. Yep.
Okay. Okay. Any other baits that like right now that you're going to? I know I saw I guess on I'm drawing a blank. The Muddy Rum one, you had looked like a spinner bait, like a white spinner bait.
Yep, that's another go-to. That's another go-to for me all the time. I love throwing a spinner bait. I've caught a lot of big fish all times of the year on that. And it seems my go-to with that is always a big 1 ounce.
I was going to ask.
But, like, even in – some people will say, well, why are you fishing a 1 ounce spinner bait in, like, 10 foot of water? You're hitting the bottom in, like, a second. And, well, it works.
It works for you, yeah. Now
I think it's the bigger blade, to be honest.
Gotcha.
It has like a size 4 or size 5 blade.
Okay.
And I think that extra flash might just get them with that smaller kind of profile.
And you seem like slow rolling that close to the bottom is what you're shooting for?
Yeah, I pretty much bottom drag that. And if there's rocks and stuff, I'll kind of pop it through them and feather it around as much as I can.
Gotcha. Okay. Anything else that you're kind of throwing more right now that the water's getting colder?
Jerk bait some too. I haven't gotten a good bite for that as well, but that's another thing that typically does really good for me this time of year.
Okay.
Even single swim bait too.
Okay. And do you switch it up or your tactics when you go like out on the river versus the lakes, or you still kind of throw in mostly the same thing?
For the most part, the same stuff. I will switch it up a little bit too here and there. Sometimes on the river, I like, especially this time of year, those flat sided crankbaits.
Oh yeah.
Especially since the river's so much shallower. They do really good for me. And even sometimes I'll throw the Ned up there or the tube. If they're really not biting nothing and it's going real slow, it seems like tube or Ned is always the easy go-to.
Yep, I was going to say that the listeners to my show will definitely know that when the fishing really gets tough on the river, Ned rig is my go-to. It's pretty much, you know, if nothing else will work, 9 times out of 10, I'll be able to get something, at least something to bite on the Ned rig. So
yeah, they're like, they can almost not resist that. It's like smallmouth candy.
Yep. I think one of our other hosts called it the Dorito bite. He always said that, if somebody holds a Dorito in front of your face, even if you're not hungry, eventually you're just going to eat the Dorito. And that, I think the Ned rig, that's a perfect description of what the Ned rig is. Cause eventually, you know, they're just going to be like, all right, you know, might as well. It's a tiny little thing. I'll just slurp it quick and, you know, get it out of the way. And, you know, then you got them. So, but, and how late into the winter will you fish? Do you pack it up at any time, or do you just keep going out there?
I will hit it all year long, as long as
it's not frozen, right?
That's
kind of when I draw the line.
And even I have one or two spots that are like warm water, like discharges that don't really freeze. So even into like the winter when mostly everything else is frozen, that usually isn't. So I'll go up there too.
Gotcha. Okay. Well, definitely I know I've frozen my butt off at Redmond many a times, broke through ice to get out of the ramp there. Now, right now you can't even, get out of the ramp unless I usually go off the one other bank. Cause with the kayak, I can go in wherever I want really. But yeah, I've definitely had to crunch ice out at Redmond to get out before. So I know a lot of times, is it friendly competition with your dad to see who catches the most fish, or do you pretty much, is there days where he definitely does better than you, or is it mostly you smoking him and he's just kind of, you know, how's that work?
That's a little of both. We'll kind of feed off of each other. And sometimes I don't show it in the videos because we really get on each other pretty hard sometimes. But there's days where he'll absolutely destroy me, and then I'm getting irritated as heck because he's just ripping them in left and right, especially towards the spring. I had one or two videos where he absolutely destroyed me, and I'm just like, are you kidding me? You're off the back of the boat right now schooling me. I'm throwing the same dang thing as you, and I haven't even gotten a bite.
Isn't that funny how
there'll be days, you know, when I do the same.
Right. How you both people on both the front and the back of the boat can be throwing the exact same thing, and yet one person's just slaying them and the other person is struggling. I've definitely been there on my father-in-law's boat quite a bit. And now on the kayak, I'm usually flying solo, so I'm only kind of fighting against myself for the most part. But you know, the few times that I have got to, you know, kind of, yeah, especially there's times when I go kayaking out with other guys and, you know, I could be fishing right next to them, throwing the same thing. And, you know, it definitely is funny how sometimes it works like that. But I was curious how that works. And I could see where it would get competitive relatively easily if you're constantly fishing with the same person on a pretty regular basis. But I think it's also very cool that I'm sure that brings you guys closer and, you know, always having, knowing you have somebody that you can go out and hit the water with, it's got to be a pretty cool experience.
Absolutely. And especially like videos aspect wise of doing it. I mean, even not for the whole YouTube thing, it's at least something that I have to look back on forever with him.
Oh, absolutely. And like I said at the beginning of the show, like the different lure breakdowns you've done where you both kind of sit and go over the different baits and lures that you use. I really enjoy those because you can tell just the way you guys work together that it just flows, and it's really cool to see that. So
that's good.
So I'm trying to think of some of the other things. Have you ever kayak fished before? I was going to ask you that.
Yep. I have I wish I had a pedal drive, but I just have a Perception Outlaw.
Okay.
And I go around in a little bit different areas with that. And I've hit the river once or twice with it, and a couple of lakes upstate that are like trolling motor only.
Mm-hmm.
But I just got that last year, so I haven't been too many places yet. Been a couple times on these smaller creeks like the Monocacy River in Maryland.
Mm-hmm.
With it, but it's definitely a big difference from a regular boat to that. The whole leverage thing was a lot of getting used to. You lose so much leverage in a kayak.
When the whole boat moves when you set the hook, it makes a difference for sure. So but even working lures, I'm sure, is different from, you know, because a lot of times you're standing on a boat deck versus sitting in a kayak. Now I do stand in my kayak for some of the retrieves I do, but you know, if it's choppy at all, I tend not to stand. And you know, so even, I mean, I just thinking off the top of my head of like working a jerkbait is completely different when you're seated versus when you're standing. You know, I can think of a lot of different retrieves that just don't work anywhere near the same when you're sitting down. So
absolutely. Or if it's a windy day and you don't have a motorized kayak or a pedal kayak, at least, oh my goodness, is it a pain.
Yeah, maintaining position is tough on a windy day, especially, you know, my second kayak was a Jackson Coosa, and that thing sat so much higher out of the water than my current kayak. It on windy days, man, it was a struggle to maintain position. And then I'd go by these guys in big bass boats and they're hardly moving. And I'm like, oh, that would be so nice. And there's definitely times when, especially out on the river, when I, you know, now I have a pedal kayak, so I can at least cover a pretty good amount of water. But there's times where I'm way down river and I'm like, man, I got to paddle or pedal the whole way back up there. And it would be so nice to drop a motor in the water and just, you know, burn my way back up there. So I could see where that would be definitely a big difference in, you know, the amount of water you can cover or, you know, there's spots, you know, for me, I have to kind of be a little tactical about where I put in on the river, you know, so that I don't have to paddle the whole way across the river to get to a different spot, you know, and you just have to be a little bit. And I think, I don't know about you, but it forces me to work the water in front of me a little more thoroughly, knowing that I can't just pick up and run to a different spot if I want to. So.
Oh yeah, absolutely. You got to be a little more strategic, I guess you could say.
And I was curious, like, you know, I know we talked a little bit about electronics. Are you mostly using your electronics for depth, finding bait, or bottom structure, that kind of thing?
Yep, a little bit of all of that, actually. I don't have anything crazy fancy like LiveScope or anything like that. I just have Hummingbirds with down and side scan. And that's all you really need. You don't need to spend the $4,000 on the live scope or for that whole setup. I'm sure it helps tremendously, but you don't need it. The structure is the main thing you want to find. And then, like, that being grass, wood, rock, anything down there that they can relate to. Or bait, of course. Too, as long as it shows you that, that's all you need.
Right. And then again, I sometimes get jealous of seeing, you know, some of the pictures that you see online from the live scope and stuff. You know, it definitely seems cool, but I think, you know, there's a big difference from I think what it would help is to at least show you that yes, there's fish there, you know. Mm-hmm. But still, you have to figure out what those fish want, and just because you know they're there doesn't mean you're going to catch them.
Yeah, you know? Exactly.
But I'm always curious.
The whole tackle box and not have them react to nothing.
Exactly. So unless you're throwing in there exactly what they want on that given day, just knowing they're there doesn't mean anything. But I think if anything, I'm always curious, you know, I wonder how many fish are here that I just am not seeing, you know. And there's times out on the river when it's like crystal clear water and you can actually see the bottom. And then I do kind of, you're like, holy cow, there's way more fish here than I was expecting, you know. And then sometimes it's even more frustrating then, because you're like, well, I know they're here, and now I just have no clue why they're not biting, you know. At least I could, you know, when I didn't know they weren't there, I could just say, oh, you know, maybe there's no fish here. But when you know they're there and then they're still not biting, it's that kind of adds a different level of frustration.
That's for sure.
So I was curious when you mentioned about kind of getting used to fishing deep. You know, I obviously, you know, you said you started out with a jig, and that was, you know, just, you know, kind of probably dragging that across the bottom. How did you kind of develop your confidence in those other techniques, and what other techniques do you use when you're out fishing deep?
A little bit of everything. I'll even do as goofy as throwing a weightless Senko in 25-30 foot of water. Now that's a heck of a fall, and on a windy day, you can't really do something like that. It's almost impossible then, but that's something I will dabble with even too. And especially with a wacky rig, that just gives it so much time in the strike zone and so much time for them to look at it. But
I was going
to
say, if you can throw a weightless wacky in 25 feet of water, you're a patient man.
Yep. But I'll do a lot of things with that, like swim baits and stuff. And the big thing that helped me the most with it, now, especially with lighter stuff, you really have to wait and really have a decently sensitive rod to feel that bottom contact with such a light weight. But I even got it with like quarter ounce weights that I can feel it dragging along the rocks good enough. And as long as I'm keeping that little bit of bottom contact, I felt like that kept me concentrated enough on the lure to just pay attention to what it was doing the whole time. And I don't know, that's just what helped me the most with fishing deep, I guess.
Okay.
And of course, the heavier weights weighted stuff's even easier.
And that's what I was going to just ask. I was going to say, you know, you mentioned the like 1 ounce spinner baits and stuff. I'm almost wondering if, you know, for those people, like even I would still consider myself a much better shallow water angler than a deep water, than going out deep. But I was curious if maybe starting out heavier, you know, and then working my way lighter would be a good tactic to kind of get more comfort out there.
Definitely. Especially if you're not used to fishing deep water and you want to go out and start, like, especially summer and maybe even into now, is probably your best time to fish that 25, 30 foot range where the fish are really going to start keying in that more of a depth. You could go out there and throw like a big 1 ounce spinner bait or a crankbait that dredges the bottom in that kind of a depth. Something that you're not necessarily going to get stuck on and then just frustrate yourself more. At least those you can kind of more feather around through stuff and deflect off of stuff. And then just getting confidence in feeling what that lure's doing down there. I think anybody who wants to start doing that, that's going to help the most.
What crankbaits do you throw that run that deep? That seems like a pretty deep for cranking.
So I'll use, now this isn't quite 30 foot, but I'll use the Rapala DT series in the 20 foot divers.
Okay.
There's a couple that go to 25 foot. One's a Nomad design. They have a crankbait out that I forget what the heck the actual name is. But they have a 24-foot diver that I've been using a lot more this year. And then there's this older one. It's called a Bass Star. I believe they actually discontinued it, but this was one of my absolute favorites. It was like a clear, sexy shag color, and that went to 25-foot.
Okay. And when you're cranking that deep, is it when you're starting to try and maximize the depth on your crankbaits, you got to really, you know, tweak your line selection and stuff, right? Because that makes a big difference on how deep. So if you're looking to go as deep as you possibly can, what's your line setup like?
Typically, I won't crank on anything more than 12 pound.
Okay.
10 pound, especially if I'm really trying to get deep, is more ideal. But I also don't like, sometimes 10 pounds can kind of screw you. Especially with, I'm kind of a dingus with fighting in fish and just rip them in sometimes. So,
well, and when you get excited, if you have a nice fish on, sometimes you just want to get it in there as fast as you can.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm, especially with making content, I'm all for trying to get that fish in as fast as I can. I can show everybody.
That makes
sometimes
sense.
Sometimes it doesn't work out the best.
And are you straight fluoro or you do braid to leader at all? Or what's your setup there?
All fluoro.
All fluoro? Yep. Okay.
Yep.
Do you do braid to leader on anything? Or
On some of my spinning rod setups, especially my kayak ones, I'll do that with and I like doing that with drop shot. Anything real light that I want to use on my spinning rods, I like that with, just gives more sensitivity. But typically on all my bait casters, I'm all fluoro except for like frogging or flipping heavy stuff.
Gotcha. So umbrella rigs and everything, it's all fluoro?
Yep. Umbrella rigs I throw on, some pipe to call me ballsy, but I'll throw it on 17 pound Seaguar or 20 pound Seaguar most of the time.
Okay. You know, that's, I was curious about that. Like, and you know, cause the few times that I've thrown it, I felt like I was just wearing my arm out, you know? So, you know, I was throwing it on a heavy rod. Do you throw yours on a heavy or? Yeah.
I have two setups that I kind of switch it out here and there. The one I use the most is a 7.6 medium heavy, but it's got a lot stiffer backbone than most medium heavies, and it's got a real nice soft tip. It goes from, I think, 1/4 to 3 ounce, so it's got a huge range.
I was gonna say, what
that, like that
doesn't sound like a medium heavy weight range to me, but I guess if it has the backbone to do it, yeah.
And the tip I really like on that rod with using the Alabama rig, because most of the time when they jack it up, the tip just completely lets loose and they're there most of the time.
Hmm. And what, who makes that rod?
It's an Enigma Phenom.
I thought you were Enigma based. I thought you threw a lot of Enigma stuff. I thought
yeah,
that
they're actually, one of the companies I'm sponsored by. So
I thought I so
primarily use most of their stuff.
Okay. And I'll have to get that specific rod from you then, and we'll put that in the show notes too, because I'm definitely interested in maybe checking that out for sure. Do you have a reel, any reels that you kind of stick to, or you kind of spread that around?
That's a little bit of everything. Enigma makes some reels. I have a couple of them. I'm a big Shimano guy. I love Shimanos. I have a couple Corrados and Shimano cores, and then the Japanese version of the Corrado, the Scorpion.
Yep.
And then I also like Daiwas.
Okay. Yeah, we have on one of our other the shows on this podcast, the Final Cast, they do reviews of different they're more of a kind of reviewed product review site and or show, and the one host on that show, we call him the JDM guy, because he loves the all the Japanese stuff, and so we've heard a lot about the Scorpions and the MGLs, and you know, it's definitely cool, because you know they are readily available to us with, you know, like eBay and stuff like that. So knowing that there's options out there that, you know, a lot of kind of US anglers don't know about is kind of cool. So definitely I'm, you know, thankful for them for turning me on to that stuff, because I've started to, you know, pick up a few of those reels and really like them. So
yeah, and they're definitely worth it. They some of them may cost a little more, but my goodness, I've had my Scorpion for maybe 6 years now, and it still feels just like the day I bought it.
Mm-hmm.
It beat hard.
Right. I was going to say, you know, that they are sometimes more expensive, but they last like crazy. Like mm-hmm. I've gone the cheap route. I've bought the really cheap baitcasters, and just, you know, after a year they're trash, you know, and you know they're, you know, definitely not as smooth as they were, and you know, whereas the Shimano stuff or the slightly higher end stuff, now I don't have anything crazy, but even just I can tell just spending a little bit more for the stuff that I've got, it really makes a huge difference in how long it lasts and you know how reliable it is.
Oh, absolutely. And even good companies like, I guess you could say, Luz and Shimano and Daiwa, some of their, I guess you could say, more mid-range reels, they're still plenty up to par. They last. They make good quality stuff. It's not like, I'm sorry if anybody uses Abu Garcia, but it's not like a cheaper Abu Garcia or even a cheaper Quantum where it kind of poops out on you within a year of hard fishing.
Yeah, no, as much, and I know Abu gets a lot of hate at times, but I started with a Black Max combo that I bought on Amazon.
One of my first two.
and that thing, for as much crap as it gets, it lasted me, you know, I beat that crap out of that rod and or that reel, and it worked fine up until the day I lost it, you know, and I had a cranking setup just get yanked off the deck of my kayak, and yeah, it went down with the ship. But for all the hate that it gets, I always think fondly back on that Black Max, because it was what got me started with baitcasters. So
I guess I can't throw too much hate at Abu. I have the, now it's a little one of their more higher end ones, but they have the Revo winch.
I was going to say the Revo. Yep. The Revo series, I think, are a little bit of a step up. So
definitely. And this, I haven't found a better crankbait reel yet. It's a 5.4:1. And I think at the time it might've been around a $250 reel, but my goodness, it's perfect for cranking, especially in cold water, because it really helps you slow down.
Yeah, that's, you know, they always say, you know, you can always slow down your retrieve on the faster reels, but you know, there's something to be said about having one that you don't even really have to think about it. You just know that, you know, you're not going to overcrank it too much. Whereas, you know, you start getting up into the the 7-to-1 gear ratios for a crank and bait rod, and you really got to concentrate on slowing your retrieve down.
Absolutely. And even some of them, you, I mean, depending on which ones, you can't even slow down quite enough sometimes to get them to bite. Sometimes that little bit of extra reel pull that it has, or that the spool spin, I guess you could say, turning, mm-hmm. It's still going too fast to get them to really act like they want it to.
Right. Oh, and to get the bait to at least have its natural wobble where it's not really looking like out of place down there, you know. For crank,
especially cold water stuff. I mean, fish aren't moving really fast, so something zipping by them isn't going to look too natural.
Well, and that's why I think in cold water, I've definitely learned, like you said, the flat-sided crankbaits seem to have a little bit better action, or something that's a little more accustomed to what they're looking for right now. And then Matt Gibson, who's been a guest on our show a few times, really got me into balsa crankbaits. And, you know, he sold me on balsa crankbaits in the cold water. And it wasn't until I really started playing around with them, and he actually sent me a few, and I started using them. And that's actually last year on Muddy Run was the first thing that I actually had success with at Muddy Run with was a balsa crankbait. So I was definitely thankful that he kind of clued me in on that, because otherwise I wouldn't have had a clue. I was like, I had never picked up much of the balsa stuff up to that point. And I was really surprised, you know, how well it did, especially in the cold water. Mm-hmm. 'Cause I always was under the belief that, you know, once it turned cold, you're going to be either throwing a blade bait or a spoon, or, you know, that they wouldn't hit those, you know, super reaction baits anymore. But the balsa crankbait definitely kind of filled that gap for me and helped me get a little bit more cold water confidence. Not that it's an easy time of year to fish, but, you know, catching something's better than catching nothing.
Oh, absolutely. And sometimes those balsa wood crankbaits, I mean, like I was saying about the Apollos earlier, they're a balsa crankbait. Mm-hmm. And you can really mess with the retrieve with them and do like stop and go stuff where they kind of float back up and then go back into it.
Yep, almost like a suspending jerkbait. They have a suspending ability to them that is really key. And I've started noticing that works really well even on the river. Like if I'm cranking and grinding bottom, then I'll just pause and let it hang out there for like a second. And a lot of times that's a really good tactic on the river, at least for me in the kayak. So,
oh yeah, even on the lakes, Marburg. I do that a lot with the riprap out there. I'll feather it around through the rocks, and then I'll feel it grinding along the bottom for a couple, and I might feel it semi-hang up, and then I'll just let it kind of float back up. And a lot of times, that's when I'll end up getting a bite, too.
Yep, that's when they freight train it, for sure.
That's making them go, oh, crap.
Yep. Any other baits that you're going to go to now? So we talked a little bit. We talked about the jerk bait. What's your jerk bait that you go to? You a Vision 110 guy, or you?
Absolutely. That hands down. So I'm not a huge jerk bait guy. It's something I kind of struggle with a little bit, but when I catch them, it's always on a Vision 110. I've never caught another fish on any other jerkbait other than a Vision 110.
Okay. I've had a little bit of luck with the pointers, and
I have tons of them, but I don't know if it's me or.
Yeah, no, it's, I struggle with jerkbait fishing too. And I feel like I'm not working it correct, or I'm not covering water enough, or it's just definitely not a confidence bait for me. How about finesse stuff? I know you mentioned Ned Rig. Do you do drop shotting at all, or?
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, yeah. I love drop shotting.
I was gonna say, I thought I saw some videos that you've done on that.
I do that a lot through the spring and summer. I don't break it out as much this time of year unless I absolutely have to. Most of the time I'm just going for like big bites this time of year. So I'm chucking a giant swim bait or the Bama rig, or if I really feel like downsizing, I'll throw like a blade bait or something, or a little bitty swim bait. But that's typically what my go-tos are this time of year, and spinner bait, of course.
Gotcha. Any particular spinner bait that you're fond of?
The hog collar. I love their light wire spinner baits.
Okay.
They have such a, especially with that bigger 1 ounce one, they have such a light wire. I feel between that and that bigger blade, it like thumps so hard. And you can feel that the whole time you're reeling it in.
And you know, the instant it stops thumping that you're in business.
Yep.
All right. I'm trying to think of anything else. Any challenges when you're fishing, trying to catch fish on video? What's your biggest challenge with that?
Just the camera's dying. I've had so many times where I've set the hook onto a good fish or something, and then the camera dies. Like just my one last video I did on the river, my camera died on me like 4 times on this one fish, and I tried to turn it back on every single time while trying to fight this fish and get it in. And finally I just gave up with it and left it alone, and then turned it back on once I got it in. But all kinds of stupid stuff like that. And when it's cold out, they really tend to act up with the batteries.
And that's kind of the last thing when you get a huge fish on, that the last thing you want to worry about is your camera. But when you're trying to capture that content to put it out there, you know, that's also an important thing. So
yep.
I've just started to dabble in kind of videoing some of my stuff. I picked up a GoPro from a buddy, and you know, I just the time it takes to edit the video. And like I said, you know, I can just see from, you know, kind of from when I first started watching you to your latest content, you know, that you're, you know, you've definitely, you know, put in some work on that, you know. And I'm sure that's a bit of a learning curve there. You know, there's so much to learn, you know, when it comes to video editing, and, you know, and it's definitely, you know, a time consuming thing, I'm sure.
Oh, for sure. It's hard to work it all in with work and trying to make a life and everything at the same time. And then also trying to get out there and get the content between work and everything else that's going on. It's not easy, and it takes a lot of time, but it's definitely fun. And like you said, there's still so much left to learn too. I'm nowhere near where I guess I'd say I want my videos to be, but it's amazing seeing how far they've come. I kind of look back at some of my more beginning videos now and kind of cringe.
Everybody starts somewhere, man. And if it makes you feel any better, where you were then is where I am right now. So I have a much further road to travel, but I definitely know the challenge. I imagine it's like me on this podcast. You know, I've learned so much from doing this podcast and talking to different people, different strategies, and you know, it's just been an excellent source of learning for me. And they always say, you know, the best way to learn something is to, you know, be able to talk to somebody else about it, or teach somebody else. So I feel like if I can get to the point where I know enough about it that I can, you know, speak intelligently about it, then I'll have learned, you know, more than I would have otherwise. So.
Oh, absolutely. And then everybody does everything a little bit different too. So they may be looking at it a different way than you. So that's always a big help.
No, for sure. And that was one of the hardest lessons for me to learn right off the bat, was that, you know, just because you see somebody on YouTube doing something one way doesn't mean that you're going to go out and catch fish the exact same way, because they might be a completely different angler than you are. They're, you know, your strength might not be their strength, or, and let alone just the, you know, You know, I watched a ton of tactical bassin at first, and you know, they're fishing the California Delta, which is not the Susquehanna River. Two completely different fisheries. Obviously, you know, fish are fish, and some things are going to work kind of universally, but there's definitely things that play well in the California Delta that aren't going to do as well on the Susquehanna River. So,
absolutely, and especially growing up liking bass fishing and watching all this stuff and seeing all this. I'm sure you know from fishing Marburg, you go out there and try to listen to something that somebody says or breaks down in a video or whatever, and it's like, none of this works.
Yeah, no,
it doesn't work like they're saying it should. I mean, you might have success one or two days here or there doing something like what they said, but chances are kind of rare at that most of the time. You're doing something a little bit different, or the fish and the weather may be telling you to do one thing and the fish are actually on a completely different thing that doesn't even make sense for the kind of conditions that you got.
And that, I think, was one of the coolest things about bass fishing, is when you kind of put that puzzle together and, you know, when you all of a sudden figure it out and bam, you just start, you know, really lighting into them. And that's when I really, you know, for all the days where bass fishing humbles me and I'm like, I got no clue what I'm doing. I feel like there's definitely days where I'm like, holy crap, I don't have a clue what I'm doing. I'm so frustrated. But then for those, you know, those days when, you know, you do figure it out and you just have a great day out on the water, that totally makes it worth it, you know?
Oh, for sure. I've kind of been spoiled most of the year. Now I'm being pretty humbled right now. The last, like, I think 4 or 5 times I've went out, I haven't gotten a freaking fish. The 2 of the 3 of the times I've had bites, but didn't get them into the boat or anything. And so I guess you could say now I'm on a little bit of a dry spell.
And how does that go with your video content? Do you, I know, you know, obviously I've seen you catch a ton of fish and, you know, do you find yourself not wanting to show that side of it? You know, are you not worried about it that as much? Cause I mean, that's as much a part of fishing, you know, I think they're, you know, if someone's just coming into this sport and they go and watch certain YouTube videos, they're going to assume, well, I'm just going to go out there and I'll just start catching fish. And, you know, a majority of fishing isn't always like that, you know?
Mm-hmm. No, absolutely. I haven't posted anywhere I haven't caught any yet, but I have noticed that sometimes the videos where I don't catch a ton do pretty well or do better than I thought they would. But I try to get stuff with fish in it just because I feel like it's more interesting to watch.
Mm-hmm.
But I have been wanting to work in more stuff like that, and maybe for like a learning curve for people to see that, yeah, it's not always like this, but even though I didn't catch anything, at least I can say what I was doing throughout the day and kind of give them at least a little info of what to try and what to do, what right. should have worked.
Right. Or, you know, how long do I stay trying this one thing before I, you know, try and switch up tactics, or, mm-hmm. or I notice this kind of situation happening, like the wind picks up, so I'm going to go to the windblown side of the lake, you know, or something like that, you know, that I think the learning aspect of that is kind of worth more sometimes than seeing a big fish catch, you know, not that everybody loves seeing the big fish catch. That's obviously why probably people start watching in the first place. But when you can teach that kind of thing that helps you figure out the puzzle, I think that's almost worth more in the end. But I can see where it's tough to put out content where it might not be as exciting as you know, the landing a huge fish.
Yeah, exactly. And that's I guess you could say the biggest struggle with it, because it's like I don't want to put something out, because especially YouTube, man, people are freaking weird, and they'll unsub for the weirdest reasons or whatever, and it's frustrating. I don't want to say I'm wanting to be a millionaire off of it, because I don't know if that'll ever happen or anything, but I do want to get my videos out there to more people to try to help them, and it would be nice to be able to fish all the time for a living.
Yeah.
That would be the dream, I guess you could say. But it's hard to figure out what people want when they don't tell you.
And then I know I've talked to quite a few YouTubers before, and one of the things that is common almost among every one of them is they'll say, I'll do a video I think is amazing and it'll get like hardly any views at all. And then I'll just throw out something thinking, I just got to get something out there. And all of a sudden that'll be one of the best videos, you know, that on my channel, you know, something I expected to not to do anything will get, you know, way more likes. And then something I pour tons of time into, pour my heart into, and like hardly any view, it gets hardly any views. So
100%. Like all the time with some of mine, like some of my absolute best, in my opinion, best put together videos and most professional seeming videos where I absolutely like went through everything possible that I could have went through, did it whole vlog style, had great transitions, all that. And it's like hardly anybody watched it. Hardly anybody looked at it. And like the thumbnail was great and all that. But then I have one where I caught like one or two fish, weren't even that giant or anything. I said maybe one or two things and everybody's commenting on it and liking it and going like, oh, thanks for all the tips and all that. Like, I didn't even give that many in this one. I gave twice as many in the last one and you guys didn't comment on it.
I can't tell you how many times I've heard that exact same sentiment. So, if it makes you feel any better, almost every person I've talked that's a YouTube personality says exactly the same thing. So it's definitely a common theme. So
yeah, it's definitely weird.
All right, man. Well, we're closing in on an hour. So I definitely, you know, appreciate your time and, you know, definitely some good tips. I'm looking forward now to trying Marburg again. I've got to, you know, just break my curse on that lake. I don't know what it is about it, but I'm definitely looking forward to trying some things out there and looking forward to trying a little offshore. I just got to up my game there a little bit and get out deep a little bit and see what works. So, that being said, I wanted to give a chance for you to shout out where folks can find you on YouTube, because that's how I found you, and then any other social media that you have.
Yeah, so you guys can find me on YouTube at Bassin' It Up Moffitt Fishing. I have, I think, well over 100 videos now on there about all kinds of different stuff, fishing all over the place around here in Pennsylvania, even a little bit in Maryland. And I also have a Facebook page for Bassin' It Up Moffitt, same thing, a TikTok and an Instagram, all at Bassin' It Up Moffitt.
How's your TikTok going? Is it that seems like a challenge? It's entirely different game.
It's different. I've had some really take off and go viral, and others, like we said with the YouTube thing, almost not do anything hardly at all. And it's the weirdest stuff that ends up going viral, or gotcha. Like the really short ones too.
Right. Right. No. And then, that's the one thing, one of the gentlemen used to be on our podcast, his wife was, did a lot of social media stuff, and I was crazy. You know, what she was telling me that some of her, she was able to kind of switch to make a full-time living off of it. And like, she makes the most off of those little like 15-second shorts that, you know, I'm like, she's like, I put up 2 15-second videos a week and I'm good. I'm like, holy cow, that's how you make a living right there.
That might be nice.
But how about sponsors? Who helps you get things done?
My two sponsors right now are Enigma Fishing and Wu Tungsten. Enigma is like all the rods that I use. They also make some pretty nice reels. And you can find them at enigmafishing.com. And I also use Wu Tungsten weights. They make tungsten bullet weights, drop shot weights, nail weights, Ned heads, and even some regular jig heads as well. I have all kinds of stuff on there, and you can find them at wutungsten.com.
Awesome, man. Well, I'll definitely, guys, listeners, check out the show notes. I'll include the links to the sponsors in there, and also include links to some of the baits that we've talked about. We'll have the Umbrella Flash Mob on there. We'll talk. I'll put the Nomad Crankbait in there, the Hog Collar, and some of the other baits that were mentioned. So make sure you check out the show notes for that stuff. And I think that's about it, man. Anything, Hunter, anything else you want to add, or anything else for the folks at home?
That's pretty much it. If you guys do find the channel, I guess, from this podcast, let me know. Leave a comment on one of the videos. That'd be pretty cool.
Cool. Yeah. Hopefully we'll at least help you pick up a few subscribers. I know we have a have decent subscriber base. So guys, definitely go out, check out Hunter and his YouTube channel on Facebook, on YouTube, Bassing It Up Moffitt. And we'll include include that in the show notes as well. So thanks again, man. It was a pleasure having you on, and we'll have to have you on again, man. Maybe I can rehash some good Marburg stories once I figure that lake out. So.
Absolutely. Thanks a lot for having me. It's been fun.
All right, dude. All right, guys. Well, thanks again for watching. This has been another episode of Bass Fishing for Noobs, where we bring you the trip, the tick. Bah, I screwed it up. Where we bring you the tricks, the tips, and the techniques to help you rip more lips. Have a good night, guys.
Thanks for tuning in to another killer episode here on Paddle and Fin. Be sure to drop a 5-star rating, a thumbs up, or smash that subscribe button on any platform you're listening in on. Be sure to check us out on Waypoint TV, waypointtv.com. Make sure you sign up for the Fantasy Kayak Fishing League at paddleandfin.com/fantasy. You could support this show through Patreon, patreon.com/paddleandfin. Don't forget to check out the website, paddleandfin.com. Catch us on YouTube. If you got a question, comment, or want to see a future guest on the show, be sure to email us at paddleandfin@gmail.com. Shout out to our show supporters, Yak Gadget. You can check out all the fine kayak accessories at yakgadget.com. Pelican Professional. For all your cases, coolers, and lighting needs, go to pelican.com. Rocktown Adventures. Your Midwest premier paddle sports destination, go to rocktownadventures.com. Eastport Marina, the beautiful destination on Dale Hollow Lake. If you're looking for lodging, kayaks, kayak accessories, or anything fishing related on the beautiful Dale Hollow Lake, go to eastport.info. And Jigmasters Jigs, when in doubt, get the jig out. Go to jigmasters.com and fill your tackle boxes today.